Hello and welcome to The Planet Today, where we cover the latest in climate change, wildlife conservation, renewable energy, and environmental policy. It is Friday, April 19th, 2024. I am your host, Matt Norton, here by myself today because we're about to air my interview with Sam Schutte of Synthica Energy. Before we get into things, here's a quick note from one of our sponsors. Today's episode of The Planet Today is brought to you by Valo Alta. Valo Alta's Everyday Handkerchief is a high-performance, daily-use handkerchief designed to help minimize your impact. Made in the United States from sustainably sourced Irish linen, capturing the material's historic craftsmanship and natural antimicrobial properties, handkerchiefs perfectly balance softness with durability and absorbency with rapid drying. Ideal for functional use in all settings, from the outdoors to routine encounters, their small and lightweight design makes one a must-carry for wherever life takes you. Build your own bundles from limited edition colors at valoalta.co/TPT for 15% off. That's valoalta.co/TPT. Today on TPT, we are joined by Sam Schutte of Synthica Energy. Sam is a renowned expert in the fields of anaerobic digestion commercialization and organics to energy platform development. Synthica Energy is a company that's developing anaerobic digestion AD facilities designed to convert organic waste into renewable gas. Their ambitious goal is to divert 1 million tons per year of organic waste from landfills and generate enough energy to power the equivalent of 30,000 homes. Sam, welcome to The Planet Today.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate having me.
We are excited to have you on. So let's talk a little bit about you, your story. What first got you interested in the environment and sustainability?
Well, that's a good question. So basically, I actually started life out of college in the technology realm, got my degree in computer science, actually. And so was in a very different industry previously in the kind of early part of my career. Eventually, started a company in that space in the technology field and ran that company for about 16 years. And during that time, you know, I think I saw, I mean, first off, from a business opportunity standpoint, I saw, you know, the sort of explosive growth in technology, in the dot-com mm-hmm. era, all the sort of growth in Bitcoin and so forth, when that all started happening, like, you know, in 2012, 2010, something like that, when I was kind of getting mm-hmm. into it. And and I always wanted to do something entrepreneurial in a high growth field. And then kind of at the same time, I have always, for a long time, since even just like, you know, school days, been interested in renewable energy. I mean, I remember back in, you know, junior high and such, doing book, you know, reports and so forth on fusion and hydrogen and solar and all kinds of energy sources like that. So I had an opportunity to kind of present itself through a gentleman I know who's now my business partner. He had some work and background in composting and organics recycling via composting.
Okay.
And he said, look, you know, if we want to start because I had said we should start a business together, like, let's do something, let's start a new business, you know, mm-hmm. looking for something new to do. And he said, well, it would be great. I think it would be a really cool idea to build an anaerobic digester in Cincinnati for all of the food wastes that he had seen and had exposure to through composting. And that sounded just right up the alley of what I wanted to do, because it was energy, it was sustainability. And then it was also like this high growth industry, and also like at the right time, because it wasn't like far fetched, you know, mm-hmm. It was something that could be done, and it wasn't like we had to completely invent new technologies to achieve it. So that's kind of the long and the short of it. And now we're where we're at today as a company Because, you know, we started the company about 7 years ago. It'll be 7 years this summer. And then we broke ground on our first facility, and are about maybe, well, over half built now. I'd say 60% built now in Cincinnati, with this, $70 million plant here in the city. And then last summer, sort of as we continued to grow out our platform, we attracted the interest of Goldman Sachs, their infrastructure and private equity group. And so we closed a large transaction with them last summer to build this platform out across multiple states and just build more and more of our facilities. So that's been the big driver of growth and work in the last 7, 8 months. And we've quintupled our staff since then, and we're very, very, very active.
Gotcha. Well, first off, congratulations. I mean, that's a massive achievement, and I'm sure that, extra investing is, or investment rather, is definitely helping you guys grow and facilitate what you want to do next with Synthica Energy. Before we get too deep into that, I'd like to just, for listeners who aren't familiar with the term, what is anaerobic digestion, and how can that be something that kind of powers the renewable energy transition?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a good question. So anaerobic digestion as a technology, if you think about it really simply, the anaerobic just means in an oxygen-free environment, that you're using microorganisms, namely a couple different species of bacteria, to break down and extract the energy content in organic materials, right? And that's the digestion part. So what that looks like and what that is in our case is large steel tanks that are sealed, completely sealed steel tanks, several million gallons each, that we take all kinds of byproducts from food manufacturing, in our case is our target market, food and beverage, and also oleochemical, pharmaceutical, flavorings, all kinds of stuff like that. So everything from bakery dough to brewery waste to soap manufacturing byproducts. And we put it in this big tank and we let bacteria break it down. And then from that, we produce, we heat it up a little bit. And from that, we produce biogas, which basically is what we get biomethane from. And that biomethane is a, negative carbon sustainable fuel source that you can put in pipelines, gas pipelines, as a one-to-one switch. You can fuel compressed natural gas vehicles with it, buses, delivery trucks, all kind of stuff are run on compressed natural gas or CNG right now. It's basically like I said, a one-for-one replacement with fossil gas. So in the grand scheme of things, you think about we're making renewable natural gas, is what we call it, from waste instead of letting that methane be emitted to the atmosphere, which of course is a very damaging greenhouse gas. It's about 30 times more destructive than CO2. We're capturing it and then and using it to take the place of a fossil gas that's coming out of fracking or, oil wells or whatever else.
And I think something else that's really exciting about that is the food waste issue is not going away anytime soon. Especially here in the US, we waste a tremendous amount of food every single year. And to be able to repurpose some of that and be able to convert it into something that is, not only useful in our day-to-day, but it's also, like you said, resulting in less fossil fuel gas being burned, that's a good thing on both fronts.
That's right. And so I mean, statistically speaking, the statistics you see is, you see anywhere from 35 to 50% of the contents of a landfill in a lot of markets is organic waste that could be recycled or could be reused, right? Now, to be clear, we have a lot of partners and friends just in food waste and food recovery in general, and there's a lot of really great efforts, like Kroger, for instance, here locally. I'm based in Cincinnati, Ohio is where the company's based, I should have said. But Kroger here, for instance, they have Zero Hunger, Zero Waste is like a big push on their part, where they are trying to, you know, rescue food and get it into better uses, right? So we have a lot of great partners in that space where we fit in that sort of pyramid of food waste reduction and food, called it food reuse, is really kind of like at the bottom of the pyramid, right? So, you know, what we take is food and material that cannot be consumed. It just, you know, because people often ask me that, like, well, isn't it better to send food waste to a soup kitchen or a free store food bank, things like that, rather than just waste it by making fuel out of it? And it's like, yeah, absolutely, that's what you should do. But who wants to eat French fries that, you know, frozen French fries that all melted and were left in at room temperature for 3 weeks, you know, like
Not me.
that's, yeah. And so you can't rescue that kind of stuff. And so you're the stuff we take, and that's kind of the waste sustainability story we have. You know, like, yes, we're creating this renewable energy, and that's great because now we're offsetting our fossil use, we're reducing, you know, escaped methane, all that kind of stuff. But it's also that we're taking up less landfill space because those boxes of expired food or something like that, they're not going to the landfill. They're not going to the incinerator. They're not going, or if it's, you know, brewery wastewater. So, you know, the we take a lot of material that comes out of like fermenters at breweries, the leftover stuff that you can't do anything with. Instead of it going down the sewer and ending up in the water supply or just ending up in waterways, you know, we're taking that stuff, really breaking it down to get all the energy content out, and kind of recycling it that way. So there's that, you know, there's that waste story. I mean, I always kind of say, tell people, like, you know, if you had barrels of crude oil, you wouldn't just throw them away. But that's what we do with all of that organic material. We just throw it away instead of using it for energy. So,
Now, this might be a pretty simple question, but how does it work with something like if there's food waste inside of a container that is made of organic matter, it's a plant-based plastic, we'll say, or better, a cardboard container with no plastics involved at all? Would you have to strip the food from the container, or are there some containers that can also be turned into fuel?
yeah, so that's a good question. So the answer is it depends. Typically speaking, the, you know, what you see is quote unquote compostable plastic out there, for instance. So if you had, imagine you had some kind of food product inside of, you know, or maybe it's just a cardboard, right? Most of the time those don't break down in anaerobic digesters. They just need way too much time. You know, a compostable plastic spoon, for instance, I mean, it can be sitting in a compost pile for quite, for, I don't know, months, you know, 60, I don't know, it depends, but, you know, a very long time, which is why most of that composted stuff or compostable stuff ends up in the landfill. Like it doesn't go to compost, right? And that's because there's not outlets to take it. It's not separated. You know, you put that kind of stuff in your backyard composter, you're going to see it's going to be there for like a year, you know. So a digester doesn't have that kind of time to let stuff just hang out. There's certain material, like I think like packing peanuts that are, you know, you see those packing peanuts and stuff that are made from, what is it, like corn solids or something like that, you know, stuff like that would dissolve. What we actually do mainly with packaged product is, so we do depackaging. So we don't throw all the packaging in there. We actually have machinery that can open up, crack open, you know, anything from soup cans to you know, plastic bags of lunch meat, something like that, to cardboard boxes, you know, Coke bottles, aluminum cans, things like that, can separate the recyclables or the trash from the sort of food energy content, right? And that's what we do with that. And then, you know, so imagine if we're depackaging aluminum cans, we'll crush them all to get the say Pepsi out or something, and then wash those and then send those to a recycler.
Gotcha. That is so interesting.
Yeah.
So I know you'd said that the company is based in Ohio and you're based out of Cincinnati. How does Synthic Energy operate in major urban settings like that? And, you know, where else do you have facilities that are operating?
So the Cincinnati plants is our first project that is under construction right now. Like I said, you know, we based and really built a lot of the designs for that plant off of a sort of a kind of a proof of concept facility that we partnered with and work with in Pennsylvania. That's a municipally owned plant that's been operating for quite some time, many decades. You know, they had leveraged a lot of the technologies there that we ended up leveraging in Cincinnati. And then what we've done is sort of expanded out into other markets. And so, like, you know, right now we have a short list basically of our next phase of plants. We kind of call it like our phase one expansion.
Mm-hmm.
The first two on that list that we're really heavily focused on for this year are in Rome, Georgia, which is about an hour northwest of Atlanta.
Okay.
That, you know, that city, Rome, like it's basically right between Atlanta and Chattanooga. And so it's right on like a major hauling traffic route. You know, there's unbelievable amount of wastes as well as just other shipped products going up and down that sort of highway there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other project we're working on is in San Antonio.
Cool.
On the east side of the city of San Antonio. So those are the two like kind of real big push next projects. And then we also have a project site that probably would be next year. We're working in Houston as well as outside of New Orleans and south of Louisville. And so those are the next three to hit. So there's five plants basically that we're, you know, actively working on, with two hoping to break ground this year.
Gotcha. So I know you touched on this quite a bit, but I'm curious what the day-to-day for Synthica Energy kind of looks like, whether that be company-wide or I guess more on the micro level. You know, what makes Synthica Energy run and operate?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was joking around with one of my coworkers the other day that, you know, we're creating a whole new industry and innovating and creating new forms of energy, but all mm-hmm. we're really doing is talking on the phone and typing on a keyboard. That's all we do.
Gotcha.
So, I mean,
so in the planning stages.
No, it's just, that's what I do as leadership. Right. But I mean, yeah. You know, the, you know, we're growing out and building our engineering team, mm-hmm. really heavily. You know, we've got a whole lot of positions for project engineers, construction managers, process engineers, you know, biology and AD experts right now that we're hiring for. You know, that we're really hiring countrywide for those. You know, we're able to work in a remote environment, even though we're headquartered here in Cincinnati.
Gotcha.
And then we've built up significant sales forces in those two markets I mentioned, in Georgia and Texas. So we built those teams out quite a bit. So, you know, I think like on a day-to-day basis, you know, the engineers and the technical side of folks are working through permitting, you know, working on all kinds of designs and drawings and working on a lot of laboratory tests of materials to really nail the biology and the chemistry of things. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the field, our sales reps and we call them business development leads. You know, they're meeting with those customers, companies, manufacturers, you know, food producers who need help and want the sort of convenient sustainability that our plants provide. And that's really kind of a little bit of a slogan we have, is convenient sustainability, because for most of these types of companies, you know, if they want to, you know, gain easy organics disposal options, they have to send stuff very far away. Because mm-hmm. there's just not that many facilities in the country. And so that's really kind of our MO is hey, let's build inside an urban market or right near it. And so that the factories that are built, say, in Atlanta, because, you know, they're built there because of the population that they need workers, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they typically don't want to build big, huge factories way out in the middle of nowhere where they can't get anybody to work, right?
Yeah.
But then because they're in those urban markets, they don't have any place to send their materials because the nearest composting outlet is three states away, you know? So that, you know, anyway, that's kind of our, what we do on a day-to-day basis is a lot of working with customers, a lot of technology stuff. Of course, you know, we're spending a lot of capital getting these plants off the ground. So there's a lot of finance activities, as well as spending time on site, and sort of managing and monitoring, you know, construction and so forth that's going on in Cincinnati. So.
Gotcha. That actually segues perfectly into what I was going to ask you more about next. When I'd spoken to your team and putting this together, convenience sustainability was one of the things that was a suggested topic. So I'd love to dive into that more and kind of see how you feel the approach of convenience sustainability works for the food and beverage industry and, you know, other food producers. How does that help them reduce their carbon footprints and environmental footprints as a whole?
Well, so, you know, when you look at when you're that kind of producer and that kind of company, you know, a lot of times they are, well, they're looking at scope emissions, right? Mm-hmm. And there's different levels of scope emissions. I'm not the world's foremost expert on this, but it has to do with how close those emissions are created to their business, right?
Yeah.
Scope 1, 2, 3 emissions and so forth, whether they're in the supply chain or at the business, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the nice things about, you know, so imagine if you have a, let's say a bakery in Atlanta that's producing donuts. Like we've done business before with, like, it's incredible the number of donuts that some of these major food brands produce on a daily basis, right? Mm-hmm. So if they want to be, they can landfill the donuts that get stale or expire, they can landfill them. Sometimes they, you know, sometimes they could feed them to animals at a farm somewhere, but like there's only so many animals. And if they're wrapped in plastic, like let's say they're individually plastic wrapped or something for sale at like a convenience store, yeah. They can't give those to pigs, right? They can't give those to animals. So, you know, from a sustainability standpoint, the fact that we're close by and that we can take those products without additional labor, without additional, you know, problems on with, and without a lot of driving to get there, like, you know, that's really the big win for them is they can reduce their costs because they're not having to drive things so far. Mm-hmm. And we just exist. I mean, a lot of these outlets just don't exist where they have no other choice other than to landfill. And so, you know, when they're looking at their kind of scorecard and their sustainability scorecard, you know, when they're looking at it right now and they're saying, wow, I am driving, you know, let's say I'm sending those trucks full of expired donuts. I'm sending them from Atlanta to, let's say, a composter in Chattanooga. I mean, that's like, I don't know, 3 and a half, 2 and a half, 3 hours drive, something like that. And if they can drive 40 minutes instead, it saves them that much more diesel because that's only one way, right? I mean, it's, you know, Chattanooga is much farther, of course, round trip. And then, so they're saving all that diesel. And then they're also not, you know, throwing all this stuff in the landfill if they're trying to be zero landfill. So there's that, you know, that's the other kind of point on their scorecard. So there's a lot of win-win situations where they can make that switch to working with us. You know, they can lock down that capacity to be partners with us at the plant and, you know, reduce, you know, make all the numbers look better on their sustainability reports pretty quickly.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I totally understand the pitch for convenience there because, like you said, it's easier. It saves them time. It saves them diesel fuel. And honestly, it's such an exciting time to be in the sustainability industry as a whole because I think maybe I'm generalizing here, but the majority of people seem to genuinely care about sustainability and understand that we have a climate crisis that needs to get solved. And then there are other people who maybe they don't care as much, but it's really hot right now. So it's a marketing buzzword to be sustainable. And if you do that correctly, you do that well, and you're not just greenwashing, people tend to view your products more favorably and they'll lean to you in, you know, instead of going to a competitor. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a really exciting time for this whole green space.
Yeah, it's really interesting to us being a, you know, a service provider and an energy solutions provider. Because, you know, that's the other thing is, I mean, of course, we also have customers who are buying our fuel, you know, our biofuel. And for those types of customers, too, I mean, that's another direct benefit on their scorecard is now they have replaced the energy consumption at their facility with renewable natural gas instead of fossil fuel. And as I kind of mentioned earlier, our fuel we produce is carbon negative, which what that means is basically on balance, when you add up, and believe me, it is an exhaustive multi-month process to add up all the places in your entire business and supply chain where carbon leaks out, if you will, and is created. But if you add those all up and you take the gas we produce and you consume it in a boiler at a factory, you actually basically removed carbon from the atmosphere as opposed to using a fossil gas, right? Which is kind of cool. So,
Yeah, definitely.
but what I was going to say, kind of in response to your comment is it's really interesting to us being service providers and energy solutions providers to see these major brands out there, that, that are our partners and customers and other customers we want to work with, making these really sort of big commitments to going zero carbon. If you look at Toyota, for instance, I believe they want to be completely zero carbon up and down their supply chain, all the way to the from top to bottom. And I mean, that is really ambitious, because how do you do that? How do you do that without making the cost of your car so much more expensive? And it's interesting too, like to your point with food brands, you look at any of these major food brands out there are all trying to hit those 2030 and 2050 and so forth carbon goals. And I think it's because our opinion, my opinion anyway, is I think they are seeing what's coming from a public perception and sort of just the market, and they realize that they don't want to be one of the ones in the end who has the coffee product that they're selling or the cola product they're selling that is like, made with
The
coal.
bad
Yeah, the
one, quote
bad one,
unquote.
made with coal or whatever, has some kind of a bad green impression, as opposed to the brand that's zero carbon, right?
I mean, people really care about this now, which is amazing to see. And I think you're right, just the way the market is trending, like you don't want to be that last brand to make the switch, holding off hope that, it won't come back to you, because people are really starting to do research on where their food is grown, who is growing it, what kind of conditions the workers go through. And it's a really hopeful time for me, despite all of the major issues that we are uncovering with supply chains and how the fossil fuel economy has really crept its way into everything. But it's like I said, it's a very exciting time because of all the solutions that are really popping up in the last decade or so.
That's absolutely right. Well, and I think that it's all about infrastructure, right? I mean, because when it comes to that, because there is, I mean, the amount of infrastructure that supports and it has been created in the last, 80, 90 years or whatever it's been, that just makes fossil fuels pervade the economy. And I mean, the entire, our entire country is built on that, right? And it is not easy to replace. I mean, you're talking about, obviously just mountains and mountains of money. And that's one of the things that we really like about our solution, is that it's pretty drop-in. And that's what you hear a lot about, in the RNG, in the renewable natural gas space, is that it's a drop-in fuel. Because if we build a plant on a gas pipeline, and trucks are already driving past our site with material, we take that material. And when we put our renewable natural gas into the pipelines, nothing has to change on the customer end. If we're selling that gas directly to, like, let's say, some industrial user that's using a lot of natural gas, they don't have to change anything in their boilers and their whatever they're doing with that heat. Or even like college campuses are buying renewable natural gas so that they can heat their entire campus with RNG. Nothing changes on their end. It's invisible. versus if they tried to electrify, which is a great thing to do, but it's massively expensive in a lot of cases. And then, of course, renewable electricity isn't cheap either, right? So it's a double whammy. I mean, I talked to one college campus at one point that, they were going to spend tens of millions of dollars upgrading all of their heating to electric and still pay basically the same that it would cost to buy our gas on a sort of net basis. And it's like, why you don't need to do that. Just buy renewable natural gas, you know?
Well, awesome, Sam. This was really fun, and I definitely learned a lot. I'm excited for my listeners to hear it. If people want to keep up with your team and Synthica Energy, where is the best place for them to do that?
Well, of course, there's our website, which is Synthica.com. That's Synthica.com. I think I'd recommend people check out our Facebook page. It's very active. We have a great social media partner we work with that we do a lot of posts on construction status, on construction and site development status in the new markets we're moving into. So that's on Facebook. You can also check out our YouTube channel or other podcasts we're on as well.
Awesome. I will link those all in the show notes. If you're listening right now, just swipe up and you got three links you could check out. Sam, we end every single interview with three fun rapid fire questions. You ready?
Sure.
All right. Number one, what is your favorite animal?
I'd say a dog.
Nice. Number two, what is something you do to be more sustainable in your own life?
I recycle absolutely everything I can at home.
Nice. And last one, what is one topic you think my listeners should be more aware of after hearing from you today?
Maybe their driving choices, transportation choices for mass transit. Or the vehicles they're driving and how big of a chunk of emissions that really is.
I feel like I could go on a 30-minute rant about how much I love walkable
Right.
cities. So, all right. Sam, thank you so much again. Really appreciate your time
Yeah,
today.
no problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, that is it for today's episode of TPT. We will be back next Friday for another episode. Just want to say thank you again to Sam for his time on this one. In the meantime, you can check out our socials at Planet Today Pod for more TPT. For the Planet Today, I am Matt Norden. See you on Friday.